Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by the two Chrises, Mr. Chris Patterson. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and yourself, Nick?
I'm doing all right. It's a good thing it's Friday, is all I can say. I'm also joined today by Mr. Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing? Oh, he seems to have frozen. So I'm going to assume he's not doing as good as he could be because his internet connection isn't working. But anyway, let's roll on with the show. The first story we're going to talk about today is the budget and the fact that there is much discussion as to what to do now that the 2 percentage point increase in VAT has been taken off the table. Negotiations have continued behind the scenes, and so far they have been pretty rocky. I believe that at least two proposals have been made with regards to budget proposals that have been put forward to cabinet that have both been rejected. A third one has a new deadline of Monday, and one of the thoughts coming out of Treasury is that they are committed to raising VAT. However, they say to a smaller degree. Treasury says that it wants to raise VAT by 0.75 percentage points rather than 2 percentage points, which I guess is better, but still, not really in the right direction. Apparently, the DA is still opposed to any VAT increase whatsoever and says that it doesn't want government to move forward on that. So it's possible that that may be blocked and money will need to be found somewhere else. There's been some discussion of increasing the Mr. Hutton was load shed or something. So anyway, the DA says that, as opposed, there's been some discussion of raising the fuel levy by inflation in order to raise additional money to fill the shortfall that was going to be created by this. The DA has an idea to have a once-off financial year payment holiday of employer contributions to the government employees' pension fund, but Treasury says that this is not a long-term thing, and so they're not super keen on that. Everyone agrees that they need to spend a lot more money on infrastructure, so that can't be cut. And there's a lot of issues now because the unions are very upset about anything the DA proposes, even though Cassatu had originally sort of played around with the idea of this government employees pension fund having payments to it suspended for a while. They've now come out and opposed it very aggressively. Nahawu said, as a principle, we don't want anyone to tamper with the GEPF. This is a serious trust deficit with government after they reneged on the 2018 wage agreement. That is why we are vigilant about anything to do with workers' money. Just a reminder that reneging on that 2018 wage agreement was because we then had COVID, which I would say was a pretty good reason to renege on that agreement. But Chris, the thing that strikes me about this budget is that the ANC just seems so reluctant to kill its sacred cows. We talked about this a little bit on Wednesday, but things like the extra expense that's added to every single contract by BE, the fact that there's so much waste, the fact that there are SAA is still being kept alive, the fact that there's this huge wage increase from public employees who are getting, 5.5% wage increase, despite the fact that they are vastly overpaid already, particularly for the quality of service we get out of government. What do you take of this from these discussions, and what should they be looking at actually getting rid of?
South Africans really can't afford any more tax increases. I mean, the Peter Maritzburg Economic Dignity and Justice Group has a household affordability index that they say, or chose at least, that the average household basket of goods now costs upwards of 5,000 rand for a household of four people. I mean, that's so unaffordable for an ordinary South African. We won't be able to afford a 0.75% increase, let alone a 2% increase. There's so much waste going on in government that it's frankly unbelievable. I mean, between 2018 and 2024, government gave SAA 38 billion rand Imagine what that 38 billion rand could have funded. And there's not...
Well, they're talking about a 60 billion rand shortfall or something now, right? So half of that could have been if we hadn't spent it all on SAA.
Treasury hasn't even been clear with us on BEE premiums. We calculate that it's at least 150 billion rand. If you cut that, it would be able to fund VAT, a VAT cut to 11.5%. I mean, that will put relief in the pockets of millions of South Africans. In fact, in the pockets of every South African. This is just ridiculous that they seem to be thinking that increases will fund their wastage.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of talk about... no, we need sustainable, you know, we don't want to do this DA idea about the employment, the pension fund, because it's only a once-off thing and it's not sustainable. It's like, well, taxing people more isn't sustainable because it's only going to further constrain economic growth and development, which means that you're also going to actually be hurting future tax revenue. But anyway, Mr. Hutting, welcome back. I believe you are having electricity problems, but... what do you make of the state of where the budget is? We were just talking about how, you know, there's still this reluctance to kill sacred cows. If you were the finance minister, what would you do in order to get South Africa on the right financial track?
My apologies for dropping off as the show started. I don't know who's trying to sabotage my participation here. We do, we have planned maintenance in the area, and it was supposed to start at 9 o'clock this morning, and the power had been on up until now. So I thought we had somehow escaped the effects of such maintenance, but fortunately the UPS, etc., things are charged, so I could join. So apologies for the disruption. Just in terms of the budget, it really has reached the point after about 15 years, if not longer, of kicking the can down the road of irresponsible policies and spending. We've now reached this point. So it's either you deal
with reality. There's no more road.
Yes, the road has run out and reality is what it is. So you can scream and shout about it and continue to pretend it's otherwise. But then you also put yourself in the IMF bailout, external assistance, you know, position where all the talk about South Africa's sovereignty and we won't be bullied in geopolitical matters. Mm-hmm. If you default on your debt and you are bankrupt in terms of your national fiscus, I mean, you're really undermining your own sovereignty in that regard, your own ability to conduct internal financial matters. So, I mean, there's so much low-hanging fruit in terms of reforms, but a lot of it does cut away at patronage systems, at you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, how the ANC has built up so much influence over time. If you look at just, for example, national departments, in 2023-24, they recorded nearly 8 billion rand in unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. So if you take that alone, never mind the bailouts for SOEs, et cetera, take that, then you look at some of the arguments for things like a wealth tax. I don't see if you can implement a wealth tax or increase VAT or whatever, you can tap more taxes from a very small tax base or tax rock. Why is there the assumption that the taxes are going to be spent effectively, that it's going to be used for what it should be used for, service delivery, infrastructure investments, etc.? It's no longer about trying to find new sources of revenue. It's about actually realizing that the state isn't functioning efficiently. It's not focusing on what it should. So core competencies, I don't say competencies as in the state is competent, just core responsibilities or core roles. No longer focusing on running a national flag carrier in terms of an airline. All these other things the South African state has tried to take on just shows more and more the skills and the capacities aren't there. So if you want to make it more fit for purpose and you don't just want to give lip service to higher growth rates, you need to really look at where you're spending. Is it effective? Look at the data and deal with those difficult political decisions.
I see that one of the things apparently negotiated here was that the DA said they wanted a spending, a sort of financial spending review to be done as a condition for supporting the budget. And apparently the finance ministry has agreed, but they say that it's not going to happen before this budget. So until we figure out where all the waste is, I don't think it's that hard, to be honest, to figure out where some of the waste is. We're going to just, you know, we have to pass this budget and then we'll worry about it later. I mean, that's... yeah, we'll see. But Mr. Patterson, any final thoughts on this before we move on?
I'm just thinking, what was Treasury doing in the months that they were going into developing this budget? They could have conducted that spending review then.
Yeah, I know that. It's like, oh, spending review. What now? Oh, we should have done that ages ago. But anyway. All right. Anyway, so we'll continue to watch what's going on with the budget with keen eye. There are many places to cut from, and hopefully the VAT increase is completely headed off, because that would be a complete step in the wrong direction for how South Africa's finances should be run. Let's talk a little bit about a story that I didn't talk about earlier this week, but it happened on Tuesday with regards to a incident of CADA deployment at SAA. So the first thing I want to say about this story is I'm so glad that finally you have a mainstream big news outlet like News 24 honing in on a specific case of CADA deployment and explaining how terrible CADA deployment is. So often we talked about it in a vague, these sort of vague terms. Oh, it's bad, or it's not, you know, it's the ANC has defended it in vague terms. But this is a great case of how we actually see how it works in practice, and how devastating it can be in terms of the potential for South African institutions to function correctly. So for those who don't know, the story is that there were these three candidates shortlisted to be the new CEO of SAA. One was a former head of Kenyan Airlines. One was a very experienced guy who was from the UK, or at least had British citizenship. Then there's the guy who's the current acting CEO, who, despite these three being on the shortlist, the acting CEO got the lowest marks when interviewed by the board. However, after a meeting with the CADA deployment committee of the ANC chaired by Paul Mashatile, the deputy president, all of a sudden his candidacy gets the green light from the Minister of Transport, Barbara Creasy. And now there's all these sort of rushed explanations to try and explain about why the other candidates on this list were disqualified. The latest explanation is, no, you see, the other two, the one from the UK had dual citizenship, and the one from Kenyan Airlines had doesn't have South African citizenship at all. Therefore, they can't get top security clearance, which is apparently what you need to run SAA. This is despite the fact that there was absolutely no mention of a South African citizenship requirement made in any of the advertising for the position in the first place, and wasn't a consideration in any of the discussions by the board up till this point. So it's clearly just a fudge to try and get out of this. But I'm going to say, Mr. Hutton, what do you make of this story? I mean, I'm glad that finally, like, CADA deployment is getting the acknowledgement it deserves. But also what's shocking about this is how this got caught early before it had happened. It was exposed to the public, and the Minister of Transport just blundered on exactly as before, pretending like, you know, nothing had changed and this is all above board.
Yeah, if you just compare the trajectories of SAA versus Kenya Airways over the last 10 to 15 years, I mean, Kenya Airways is not growing as much as Ethiopian, for example, but just recently announcing they're going to acquire, I think, two new cargo aircraft later this year. So they're investing, I think, where possible to increase the tonnage that they can move, not just from a passenger's point of view, but a freight point of view. So their CEO, you know, really steering the airline in a very good direction. If you look at SAA, ostensibly somewhat stabilized just in terms of debt payments over the last 2 to 3 years, but on the back of massive amounts of state bailouts, taxpayer bailouts effectively, then you ask the question, you know, are the powers that be really that focused on making it a fit for purpose airline, or does it continue to really be this vanity project and another vehicle for patronage and influence? There's also
my favorite point of comparison on SAA, when India's national carrier began running into similar problems to SAA of being dysfunctional and not profitable and all that, they said, well, we're going to sell it, and if someone doesn't buy it, we're going to dismantle it. Oh. Now, there are many things that India doesn't do right, but when it comes to SOEs, apparently they have the right idea, and that's one we should follow.
Just another thing to highlight is the alleged and apparent involvement of Deputy President Paul Mashatile, where the Deputy President doesn't really get involved in these sorts of appointments, or is not supposed to be. Ostensibly, it's the Minister who should decide. That's the political principle, and you know, in that parlance. So that already, you know, indicate is another, I think, warning signal in this particular appointment. So let's see what comes from it, if anything. I know that based on the reporting as well, that a party like the DA did indicate they were against it, and then cabinet did approve, did vote in favor of this move now. So there is a question around, you know, again, political capital. Where are the battles being fought? I don't have all the information, so I'm not, you know, categorically saying X or Y, but just it's not a particularly positive sign, although it's not the biggest thing compared to the budget, but it's another sort of point that points to basing appointments on political connections, on influence, undue influence by other politicians in SOEs, and points to the issues facing an SOE like SAA not being fixed in any substantive way anytime soon.
Mr. Patterson, it's I think it's one of the most obviously indefensible programs of the ANC that they have refused to move on at all, which is the that of the continuing defense of cadre deployment, which is, just a reminder for those who have forgotten, is a program to place in every single state enterprise and even sometimes extending beyond the state, even into civil service or politics. So it is part of the National Democratic Revolution, which the ANC adheres to. And it is this idea that every single sphere of everything in government and society should have an ANC loyalist or someone who is in line with the ANC's vision for society in charge of it. This is a stated policy of the ANC. It is a core part of their control of the state and their policy programs. And it has also been the cause of so much destruction, because you are appointed to a job for political loyalty and not for competence. It seems, and of course, what was it, last year, that President Ramaphosa was taking, the DA, I think, took Ramaphosa to court saying that cadre deployment was unconstitutional, and Ramaphosa defended that suit, despite allegedly being some sort of reform-minded, business-friendly guy. So, Mr. Patterson, you know, your thoughts just kind of on where this issue sits now. What do you make of this specific example, and what do you think about whether South Africans are turning against cadre deployment in a big way? Because that's the feeling I get.
South Africans have been exposed to the effects of cadre deployment, most notably in municipalities. I mean, look at the state of municipal infrastructure. So we know that it's going on. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And the ANC seems to think that this is a good idea. But we know, the public knows, that it's not a good idea. And I don't know where that case is on cadre deployment, but this, it's just shocking, an idea that the minister apparently instructed the SAA board to change instructions. She's literally allegedly messing in the board's conduct. I mean, that's just wrong. Everybody knows it's wrong. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if once the ANC is out of government, hopefully sometime in the future, things will change. But I don't have any hope.
Yeah, I think it also speaks to the inability of the ANC to sort of grapple with this declining place in South Africa. I mean, we had that SRF poll on Monday, and just so many things indicating that the party is in huge, huge trouble politically. It's fighting internally. It's divided. And there's just no course correction. It's just exactly doubling down. And as a I can't remember who it was, but as some political commentator once said, if something can't go on forever, it won't. Mr. Hutton, final thoughts?
I think this is, yeah, that is an indication of the decline of the party, just these internal ructions. And part of that decline, when you've built your party or your empire on patronage and influence, then it shakes out in ways like this, where they're still vying for fiefdoms, vying for access to state resources and all that sort of thing. It's not particularly pretty, of course, but it is very much expected.
All right, now for our last story of today. And this one is just one of those stories where you just kind of go, oh, God. So property registrations in Johannesburg are no longer able to continue, according to some media reporting at the moment, because the 32-story building in which the city's deeds office is housed was shut earlier this week. Why has it been shut? Well, because the lifts don't work. And apparently, the employees in the Johannesburg deeds office refused to walk up to the 22nd, 25th, and 26th floors, which is where their offices were. Some journalists from News 24 went to the building and said, you know, what's up? Are you guys open? They were told that we're open, but not working, which is a great phrase to describe so many government institutions in South Africa. But this has caused all sorts of problems for real estate agents and anyone trying to do business around property. The office falls under the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. So this is something that I can't remember who the Minister of Land Reform is. I know he's from the PAC. And Steenhuisen should be looking into I'm not sure under which minister this would fall specifically, because they sort of divide that department between the two of them. But this seems like it should be a priority. But it's just sort of such a great example of what's going wrong in our state, is that these basics, the lift doesn't work, are holding up the entire... I mean, also the fact that people aren't walking up the stairs. Like if I tried that, not that we have an office anymore, but even if a, shall we say, rotund character such as myself attempted to tell my boss that, no, I'm not walking up the stairs because it's too far to walk, I would be fired into the sun in a disciplinary faster than you could cough. And we don't have John on today, but I'm sure our boss, John Andrews, would confirm that assessment. Mr. Patterson, you know, I don't really know how much more there is to be said on this one, except it's sort of so emblematic of so much that's wrong.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go to access a government service and you don't have access to it, I was reading a letter the other day, someone was complaining about IDs in the Home Affairs office. They just said they're not going to vote anymore. I mean, that you just put the people off from accessing government services. I mean, this is just shocking. I mean, the people don't have access to title deeds because the deeds office is not working. I mean, you're literally robbing them of their property rights.
Mr. Hutton, your thoughts on the broader implications of this kind of dysfunction?
Well, perhaps this is one way for the state to pursue expropriation without compensation, without having to go through the actual work.
Yeah, there you go. Just close the deeds office.
Yeah, in all seriousness, you say, you know, it's the basics, but this sort of thing, when things function properly, just in terms of state departments, entities, infrastructure management, it's almost like it's magic or it happens in the background, so you don't see it really happening. But when things fall apart and the attention to detail isn't there, the using and investing of resources, and in this case, you know, tax revenues, tariffs that are collected by governments to be apportioned to different entities under their purview, be they national or provincial or municipal, then you start to see the breakdown of services, which then impacts people's lives in a very fundamental way day to day. So it becomes, when we talk about things like the budget and the shortfall of revenue and deficits, then it becomes real in people's lives, where they can't, their economic human potential is held back by the failure of these sorts of entities and services that really should be functioning, because people do pay their rates and their taxes wherever possible. South Africans generally have been very compliant in that regard. I think that will likely decline over time even more and more, because they're not getting the services for which they pay. But it acts as an effective brake on economic growth and activity. The president, Minister Dean McPherson in Public Works and others, they've talked about needing to lift South Africa's growth rate, making it a construction site, all this sort of stuff. It's great to have those stretch goals, but if these basics don't work, then you can't get there in the end. And I think unfortunately, that's not particularly sexy work, the day-to-day work of government and filling out forms and making sure budgets are managed. But without that, you're not going to have the ribbon-cutting ceremonies. You're not going to have City of Joburg, you know, as this beacon of economic growth for everyone to flock to, all that sort of stuff. So I realize it's difficult work, but it has to be taken care of.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think ultimately a sort of unrecognized part or recognized part, but not often discussed in these terms, is that there's this huge crisis of middle management across a lot of South African institutions, but particularly in government, where, you know, someone who's there to make sure that, you know, the when there's a problem at work, it gets solved, right? I'm sure there is someone who's responsible for that in this office who's just not doing their job. And why they're not doing their job, well, one can speculate. But I wouldn't be surprised if the lower sort of ranks of cadre deployment of that person, you know, maybe perhaps have been favored for that position because of their political alignment, didn't play a role in this in this, you know, breakdown. And when you don't have that middle management, someone to say, okay, guys, look, I know that it sucks going up all these stairs, but, like, you know, unless you have a heart condition, you have to walk up the stairs or else I'm going to institute a disciplinary against you. Someone who says, okay, the lift is broken, I'm going to call the maintenance every single hour of the day until they come and fix the lift. Those are clearly not, you know, if there's anyone doing that job, they're not succeeding in it. Mr. Patterson, any final thoughts before we close up?
I heard you mention disciplinary proceedings. You know how much money the government has wasted on years-long disciplinary proceedings. So they might think that's a good way to go to make some money.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And one of the reasons that they often end up wasting money on these things is because you have middle managers who don't follow the proper procedures, because South Africa does have these overly complicated labor laws, which, you know, we think should be reformed. But you can still institute disciplinaries and firings and such under those labor laws. But you have to follow the rules and the procedure, and you have to say, okay, here's this warning, and I'm saying that you need to comply with it by X date or whatever, or else you'll get a second warning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't follow those basic procedures, you're going to end up in all sorts of legal trouble. And we see this across departments all the time. I mean, the amount of municipalities that fail to pass their financial audits is also another symptom of this. In order to pass your audit, it's not that you haven't misspent money or stolen money necessarily. It's just that you've accounted for everything. So you could steal all the money in your municipality as long as you put it in your ledger that this is how you've spent it, I guess. But anyway, before I go completely mad from the story, I think let's call it there. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We hope that you found the show interesting. We will, of course, be back next week on the Daily Fringe Show. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.